Do you ever wonder where all your money went? Like every single time you look at your bank account? Honestly, it's probably all those subscriptions. I felt that way too, until I got Rocket Money. Rocket Money helped me see all the subscriptions I'm paying for, and it was eye-opening. Between streaming services, fitness apps, delivery services, it all adds up so quickly. Rocket Money is a personal finance app that finds and cancels your unwanted subscriptions, monitors your spending, and helps lower your bills. Rocket Money has over 5 million users and has helped save its members an average of $720 a year, with over 500 million in canceled subscriptions. Stop wasting money on things you don't use. Cancel your unwanted subscriptions by going to rocketmoney.com/Wondery. That's rocketmoney.com/Wondery. rocketmoney.com/Wondery.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.
From 30 Rockefeller Plaza in New York City, please enjoy this podcast edition of Late Night with Seth Meyers. Today's show features Seth's conversation with activist Janet Mock, who also takes a few more questions backstage just for this podcast. But first, a closer look.
Attorney General Jeff Sessions testified in the Senate today as several of President Trump's allies call for firing the special counsel in charge of the Russia investigation, Robert Mueller. For more on this, it's time for a closer look. Today, Trump held a meeting at the White House on Obamacare. His senators worked secretly behind closed doors to write a bill that could take health insurance away from 23 million Americans. But as usual, Trump seemed less concerned with the substance of the bill and more concerned with himself.
I've been talking about repealing and replacing Obamacare now for almost 2 years. Don't forget, on June 16th, June 14th is my birthday, but June 16th was the day I announced that I was running. Some people said, really? That gonna happen? And it happened.
We all said, really? Is that gonna happen? In fact, we all still say that. Every day when I read the news in the morning, I have one of two reactions. Really? Is that gonna happen? Or I secretly pour whiskey into my mug while no one's looking. That's good water. Also, unless you're 7 or younger, stop telling people when your birthday is.
June 14th, that's my birthday. That's my special day. So hopefully there'll be presents of some kind. Because it's my day.
Now, Trump also complained that there are no Democrats who support the GOP healthcare bill, but that's because there are no Democrats who know what's in the GOP healthcare bill. In fact, Republicans are engaged in one of the most breathtakingly cynical acts of governance in modern history. They're trying to write and pass a healthcare bill without telling anyone what's in it. The bill is so unpopular that, according to reports, Senate Republicans are working to finish their draft health care bill but have no plans to publicly release it. One Senate GOP aide said, quote, "We aren't stupid." To paraphrase the dude, you're not stupid, you're just an asshole. Of course, amid all of this, there's the ongoing special counsel investigation. It seems like every day the news surrounding the Russia scandal and the firing of former FBI Director James Comey get more intense and more unbelievable. It's like every time we think we're on top of Crazy Mountain, a cloud blows away and there's another peak to climb. And Trump himself is apparently aware of how bad things look for him right now because the White House is demanding Republican House members appear on cable news networks to defend President Donald Trump. A source close to the administration said the White House is demanding members appear on Fox, MSNBC, and CNN, adding the president is obsessing and watching every channel. That's right, the president is obsessively watching cable news. So at least he has one thing in common with all of us. I've watched so much cable news in the last 7 months, I'm pretty sure I've memorized Chris Hayes' blazer rotation. Trump's our first president to spend more time watching the Situation Room than he does in the actual Situation Room. Trump is apparently obsessing, in particular, over the appointment of a special counsel, Robert Mueller, to oversee the investigation. Mueller, a former FBI director, is highly respected by members of both parties. He's so widely respected that firing him would seem completely out of the question. Like, if there's one thing Donald Trump could do to make himself look incredibly guilty, it's fire the special counsel. And even for Trump, that would just be a bridge too far, right?
Just hours after leaving the White House, President Trump's longtime friend, Newsmax CEO Christopher Ruddy, claims the president is considering firing special counsel Robert Mueller, the man in charge of investigating possible collusion between the Trump campaign and Russia.
I think he's considering perhaps terminating the special counsel. I think he's weighing that option.
So Trump might fire the man who's investigating him just as that investigation is heating up. Now, I'd say that's too insane even for Trump, but then again, this would be the second time he's done that. Now, again, this would seem like outlandishly crazy move even for Trump, but nothing made me more convinced that he might actually do it than this tweet from a CNN reporter. Source close to Trump says the president is being advised by many people not to fire Special Prosecutor Robert Mueller. And there's no better way to get Trump to do something than to tell him not to do it. He treats political advice like their wedding vows. Till death do us part, we'll see about that. Of course, as we know, Trump already has a history of firing law enforcement officials who are supposed to be independent when they challenge his administration. He fired acting Attorney General Sally Yates after she warned the White House about Michael Flynn's contacts with Russians and refused to enforce his travel ban, and fired U.S. Attorney for the Southern District of New York, Preet Bharara, after telling him he wanted to stay on. And he fired Comey after asking him to end the Flynn investigation. I don't know if Trump's guilty, but he definitely acts like a person who's guilty. It's like if every time you heard a knock at the door, you immediately yelled, "Do you have a warrant? You ordered a pizza?" On top of all this, there's the growing chorus of Trump allies calling for Mueller to be fired and becoming increasingly rabid in their rhetoric about the Russia investigation.
The special counsel Robert Mueller's investigation is now turning into a witch hunt. It needs to be shut down immediately.
We have a conspiracy remaining afoot in the Department of Justice that is going to be out to destroy this president, and they've got to be fired, if not worse.
End the special counsel. End the Senate and House so-called investigations. And let's get on with draining this swamp of these nasty, nasty creatures.
These nasty creatures? Have you seen the dudes on your side? Steve Bannon looks like he burst out of someone's chest. So Sessions' testimony today could not have come at a more tumultuous time. In fact, many of the decisions Sessions made himself have led us to this moment. As you may recall, Sessions was forced to recuse himself from the Rush investigation after it turned out he had lied to the Senate during his confirmation hearing about two separate meetings he had with the Russian ambassador, Sergei Kislyak. Remember, Sessions volunteered out of nowhere that he has had no contacts with Russian officials, a claim that later turned out to be false.
If there is any evidence that anyone affiliated with the Trump campaign communicated with the Russian government in the course of this campaign, what will you do?
Senator Franken, I'm not aware of any of those activities. I have been called a surrogate at a time or two in that campaign, and I didn't have communications with the Russians, and I'm unable to comment on it.
Very well. Without divulging sensitive
information. Look at that face. That's the face of a man immediately regretting the words he just said. That's the same face Sessions would make after saying, "Well, Mr. LeBron James, I do believe I could beat you one-on-one, and I'm willing to bet my life savings." In his testimony today, Sessions tried to explain that answer by claiming that he was confused by Franken's question.
Senator Franken asked me a rambling question after some 6 hours of testimony.
Oh, you thought Franken's question was rambling. Need I remind you that this is the guy you work for?
That speech was hot for about 2 or 3 hours after the speech was made because they came up with other things having to do with other people that they shouldn't have been able to do and they shouldn't have done. But they did it. And you know exactly what I'm talking about.
No. No one knows what you're talking about. If Sessions thought Franken's question was rambling, then he must just black out whenever he talks to Trump. So Sessions was forced to formally recuse himself from the Russia investigation. But then last week, Comey added to the intrigue when he testified that there was another undisclosed reason why Sessions had to recuse himself that he couldn't discuss publicly. And soon after that testimony, we found out what it was.
We're learning now that in closed session this afternoon, the fired FBI director James Comey told senators that the reason he didn't want to discuss the Attorney General Sessions any further in public session is because of a possible third meeting, undisclosed meeting between Sessions and Russia's ambassador to the U.S., Sergei Kislyak.
The information about the third meeting comes from communications between Kislyak and the Russians, according to the New York Times. The intelligence appeared to be based on intercepts of Kislyak discussing a private meeting he had with Sessions at a Trump campaign event. And I'm assuming that intercepted discussion was Kislyak saying, "Can you believe it? They keep taking meeting with me, even though I'm obviously shady character. Will you sit down with me?" They say yes. I can't believe this. Now, today, Sessions also angrily denied that there were any secret reasons why he had to recuse himself, despite Comey's sworn testimony, which later led to a heated exchange with Senator Ron Wyden of Oregon.
"I recused myself from any investigation into the campaign for president, but I did not recuse myself from defending my honor against scurrilous and false allegations."
Mr. Comey said that there were matters with respect to the recusal that were problematic and he couldn't talk about them. What are they?
Why don't you tell me? They are none, Senator Wyden. There are none. I can tell you that for absolute certainty. This is a secret innuendo being leaked out there about me, and I don't appreciate it.
That's right. Sessions is defending his honor from scurrilous innuendo. And there's nothing more Southern than scurrilous innuendo.
"His sister never got married. She prefers to tend to her pussy willows."
One of the most noteworthy exchanges came when Sessions declined to answer questions about his conversations with Trump, but did not cite executive privilege, instead claiming that he was protecting the president's right to potentially invoke executive privilege in the future, which led to this back and forth with Senator Martin Heinrich of New Mexico.
"Has the president ever expressed his frustration to you regarding your decision to recuse yourself?"
Senator Heinrich, I'm not able to share with this committee private communications.
"Because you're invoking executive privilege."
"Senator, I'm protecting the president's constitutional right by not giving it away before he has a chance to
review
it. And secondly, I am telling the truth in answering your question in saying it's a longstanding policy of the Department of Justice.
Are those
not
policies written?
Yet, even and to make sure the president has full opportunity decide these issues.
Can you share those policies with us? Are they written down at the Department of Justice?
I believe they are.
Wait, you believe they're written down somewhere? Come on, Mr. Attorney General. Do these rules really exist? That's what I thought. So the president's allies are now going around calling for the special counsel to be fired, and Republicans are trying to pass a health care bill in secret. Is there any good news out there for Trump?
"June 14th is my birthday."
All right. This has been a closer look.
Hey, I'm Amber Ruffin.
And I'm Jenny Hagel. Thank you so much for listening to the Late Night with Seth Meyers podcast.
But just one more thing. If you could, please subscribe and rate our podcast.
And review it.
And review it. And then call us and tell us you like us in person. Thank you so much.
Welcome back, everybody. Our guest is a journalist, host, and New York Times bestselling author. Her new book, Surpassing Certainty, What My 20s Taught Me, is available today. Please welcome to the show, Janet Mock, everybody. How are you?
I'm really good. I'm kind of nervous, but excited.
Oh, did you bring a fidget spinner? That seems to me what
people I think I need to borrow that from Brian real quick.
So, congratulations on your second book. This is about your 20s. Mm-hmm. You are in your 30s now. Does it seem like it hasn't been that long a time to reflect back on your 20s already?
Well, it's kind of funny because so many of these books are often written by women who are in their 60s and they're reflecting back on their good old days. And so for me, I really was working on this book at largely 32 years old. Uh-huh. And I had kind of just left it. So.
But I mean, I guess that's nice that your memory is probably a lot sharper as to what your 20s were when you write it.
Well, right? There's that sense of like the closeness to it, which kind of brings, I think, a lot of more intimacy.
Because I'm sure when I'm 60, my memories of my 20s will be, I will make myself far cooler than I actually was.
Well, there's also the threat of doing that, too, because I'm so close to the experience that I don't want people to judge me as much.
That's true. And also, a lot of the people that you knew in your 20s, they probably are still your friends, and they could say, like, hey, hold on one second.
Well, yeah, you're kind of... Well, that's the thing with being a memoirist, is that you kind of betray everyone in your life.
There you go. And now, so this... You've said this... You wanted this to be your first book, but your first book was about growing up trans and transitioning, and you felt like you had to get that one out of the way. Can you explain what you were thinking behind that was?
Well, I think so often, you know, most of the stories that we have to tell as trans people have to involve around our body. And so I felt really obligated to that when I decided to step forward at 27 years old and tell my story for the first time. And at that point, I think that our culture was at a space where we needed more stories that were a bit more diverse in the trans genre or the transgender memoir. And so for me, I wanted to complicate that by showing someone who was young, who transitioned as a young person, someone who was of color, someone who grew up poor, you know, the opposite of some of the stories we see oftentimes
and
in media.
Was it...
I'm, like, trying not to say her name. I know, I'm so shady, I'm so bad.
No,
anyway.
Don't worry. Everybody, by the way, knows that name. That's kind of, yeah. So here's the thing. But now, is it nice, is it refreshing for you, because obviously now more than ever, there is a sense that your readership would understand these issues a little bit more than had you written a book about transitioning 20 years ago. Does that give you a freedom as a writer?
It does, especially now, too, you know, being able to, you know, in Redefining Realness, my first book, I really gave people language and definitions because as our culture, we were looking for language and definition, and now... With this book, I'm able to kind of just free myself and just center myself and not have to offer people, like, I'm Janet Mock and I'm trans. Trans is an umbrella term that describes da-da-da-da-da. You know, now I can just be like, I'm trans, and people kind of just get that already. And so there is a freedom to that.
And then you can move on to your life experiences, one of which is that you you interned at Playboy?
Yes.
So this was...
That was my big break.
That was your journalist big break. Mm-hmm. And Playboy was not what you expected it to be.
It wasn't. Well, what was so interesting is I remember sitting with a career counselor at NYU when I was in grad school, and I said, I kind of want to, I really want this internship, number one, because they paid $10 an hour, and they also gave you school credit.
Wow.
So this was like, this was the jackpot.
Yeah.
And I was like, should I write something a little bit more ballsy? And she was like, yeah, you know, just use your voice, show them your sense of humor, show them that you can, you know, do this work. And I was like, my name is Janet Mock. And I have three years of editorial internship experience. I have, you know, a master's on the way. And I also have a 34D. And it was such a bizarre moment for me because I also got called in. So it made them very interested in me.
Right.
And then I got the job.
Yeah. But maybe it was for the other stuff that you got the job.
Well, it was. But, yeah. But I also think that there was a sense of, like, they're like, okay, she gets that this is, like, you know, a TNA magazine.
Yeah.
So she gets it. She's not going to take herself too seriously. And when I got there, it wasn't really glamorous at all. There were no, you know, girls next door. There was no Hugh Hefner.
The girls next door didn't come into the office every day?
Not.
They didn't punch the clock?
They didn't stop by Fifth Avenue.
So I want to talk. Obviously, there's an interesting time in our country with trans issues because... more of them are being represented on television and in film, in literature. Still not the amount that probably seems fair, but more than ever. And yet at the same time, we have an administration who's degrading those rights. How do you feel right now about the moment we're living in?
I'm incredibly hopeful. I think that there's a lot to be afraid of. And there's a lot to be outraged about. But I think that what has happened in this moment is a sense of urgency. And I think a sense of us reaching across our differences and our little spaces to kind of figure out how we can link arms and come together and try to resist, right? And so I think that my community, specifically trans folk of color, have largely always been a part of a resistance movement. I think about Stonewall. It was largely, you know, Marsha P. Johnson and Sylvia Rivera who were there resisting and thriving and trying to figure out ways to be creative and take care of their community. And so I think that what's happening now is that a lot more people are outraged and they're trying to kind of figure out kind of some kind of hopefulness through coming together in a community to kind of resist the space.
Well, I cannot tell you how great it is to have someone like you writing these books. I hope you keep it up. I can't wait for your book about the 30s. I hope I'm in that one.
In 5 years. Okay. Yeah.
Thank you so much for being here. Janet Mock, everybody. Surpassing Certainty is available now.
Hey, everybody, this is Henry from Late Night. I'm here with Janet Mock. It's great to have you on our podcast. You have your own podcast, and you had a very special first guest. Tell us about that.
Oh, God, my podcast, Never Before, our premiere episode was the Queen Mother herself, Beyoncé's mother, Miss Tina Knowles Lawson. It was such a surreal experience for me because I grew up as, like, you know, ground zero
Destiny's Child OG fan. So for me to be in Tina Knowles' home in the Hollywood Hills and to interview her at her kitchen table was just surreal.
Yeah.
I couldn't believe that she was talking to me, that she gave me a tour of her Black contemporary art collection, that she talked to me about hair, she talked to me about carrying Destiny's Child and Beyonce's luggage. She talked to me about cutting out her own blonde highlights to put it in Beyonce's hair as a teenager. To keep a promise as a mom. Uh-huh. It was amazing.
Fantastic. I also want to ask a little bit more about the book. We were chatting earlier. You wrote your new book, Surpassing Certainty, by hand.
I did.
That's amazing.
I know. I'm kind of old school that way. Even though I'm kind of a digital native, it is really
bizarre.
You have
a podcast.
Yeah, exactly. I have a podcast. I'm on the internet all the damn time. I'm doing Insta story, Snapchat, all the things. But then I sit down with a yellow legal pad and just write longhand. And I run through pens like it's nobody's business. Like in a day, I run through like 2 pens.
Is that right? And then you just had like stacks of paper kind of everywhere.
I do, and my husband is very upset because it costs about $90 a month to have a storage unit to hold a lot of the papers that I keep, which I guess like the Schomburg Institute or something will be happy to have it someday as archives.
Right. I wanted to ask you, when you're on the road traveling for work, traveling to promote a book, I'm wondering what the conversations you have are like with young trans people, young cisgender people, just all different types of people. What kind of conversations do you have with people who come to your types of events?
You know, they're professors, they book me, right? Like a lot of the people from the diversity inclusion office or the young feminist space. And I think that they book me to come and talk about gender issues.
Uh-huh.
And I give my spiel and my speech or whatnot, my stump speech version of it. And in the Q&As, I kind of really realized that a lot of young people just are looking for, I love that. We have a little soundtrack.
Like construction
backstage
at late night.
Some set design. But, you know, they ask me a lot of questions about how do they live in this world? How do they bring their full selves and their identities to the spaces that they enter? And also, a lot of them are really concerned about leaving the safe space of college where they get to craft these trigger warnings, where they get to figure out, you know, how to, like, diversify and complicate their conversations when they then go into their first internships, you know, outside of academia. And what does that mean to kind of to be themselves at work.
Yeah. So what kind of advice do you give to people at these types of events?
Well, I remember having a really hard time giving people advice. And I think that that's what led me to write Surpassing Certainty, my new book, because I wanted to answer those questions. And part of answering those questions, putting myself back in that space of being an anxious, unsure, but super ambitious 19-year-old.
Right.
Who had all these great dreams, but didn't really know how I was going to go and plot that forward with all of my identity markers as a trans person, as a person of color, and as a woman, right?
Right.
And so there was a lot of uncertainty. And so for me, I went and answered a lot of those questions. A lot of people asked me, how did you do what you did? And it's not an easy, answer. So I think it took a whole book to talk about.
Yeah.
But I think my number one advice always is for folk to figure out ways in which they can find the spaces and the people that affirm them, that listen to them, that nod, and that will advocate for them. And then also making sure that people are stingy. I think it's important that people like really figure out ways in which they take care of themselves first before they can go out and try to do anything else for anyone else. It's like that weird thing when you're flying or whatnot, and the flight attendants tell you, like, put on your mask first before you put, even for your own child, you put on your mask first, because if you don't take care
before
of yourself first.
The person next
exactly.
To, yeah. Yeah. Well, it's such a pleasure to have you at the show. The book's great. The first book's great. I'm so glad you were here for the show.
I was so nervous.
You
just stopped sweating, like, right now.
But it's so funny. You know, we were just chatting about it. You're on TV so often. You speak at these events, but I guess this kind of setting is just... it's just different with 200 people
like,
in a room.
Well, yeah, there's all these people in the room. Yeah. There's a band, there's cameras, there's lights, there's cue cards, there's teleprompters. You're like, oh my God, there's so much going on. And then you're trying to be like yourself and connect with someone.
Right.
And it's always so hard, especially for me as like someone who also does this work. Like,
you interview people yourself all day long.
Asking questions. It's so different when you're like in the other.
Is it weird? I mean, to be like as someone who interviews people all the time, but you also get interviewed. It must be like half of your life is interviewing people and the half is getting interviewed.
Yeah, but I'm so much more comfortable like driving the conversation than I am.
So you answer the questions you would get asked kind of in your writing.
Kind of, yeah. And I'm probably most comfortable talking about myself and my life through the act of like being alone in a room writing.
Than it is to do
this whole thing. I'm moving my arms all around.
Being alone in a room writing with just stacks and stacks of yellow legal pens.
Yeah. Like I'm Ally McBeal or something.
Right. Janet, thank you so much.
Thanks.
Such
so much
a pleasure.
Thank you.
So much fun.
Want more Late Night with Seth Meyers? Be sure to follow the handle @LateNightSeth on Facebook, YouTube, Twitter, Instagram, and Snapchat. You can also watch full episodes of Late Night at LateNightSeth.com or on the NBC app. And please tell your friends who are fans of Seth Meyers to subscribe to the podcast on iTunes.
Welcome to the small town of Chinook, where faith runs deep and secrets run deeper. In this new thriller, available exclusively on Wondery Plus, religion and crime collide when a gruesome murder rocks the isolated Montana community. Everyone is quick to point their fingers at a drug-addicted teenager, but local deputy Ruth Vogel isn't convinced. She suspects connections to a powerful religious group. Enter federal agent V.B. Loro, who has been investigating a local church for possible criminal activity. The pair form an unlikely partnership to catch the killer, unearthing secrets that leave Ruth torn between her duty to the law, her religious convictions, and her very own family. But something more sinister than murder is afoot, and someone is watching Ruth. With an all-star cast led by Emmy nominee Sanaa Lathan and Star Wars Kelly Marie Tran, Chinook is available exclusively and ad-free on Wondery Plus. Join Wondery Plus in the Wondery app or on Apple Podcasts.